Matt, on this wonderful subject, beginning with John 14, a very, very familiar text where the Lord is reassuring His apostles, let not your heart be troubled. This is John 14, 1 through 3. Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. This is the blessed assurance that, of course, keeps us encouraged and keeps us going. Let's read a number of these scriptures, and you're probably going to say, well, you didn't read so-and-so. I'm sure that's true. I won't have time to read nearly all of them, but I've picked out some, and then you can, I hope that reading these tonight will cause us to want to read all these scriptures, these and a lot of others, and meditate upon this wonderful thought. Matthew 5 and 12, rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. Great is your reward in heaven. The word reward bothers some people. They're always emphasizing, you know, our unworthiness and you can't earn salvation and so forth. Well, the Lord knows what He's saying, and He's saying there's a reward for those who live in His service. And Revelation 19 says these are worthy. So in some sense, even though we don't earn, in some ways we're not worthy, but we practicing righteousness, the Lord looks upon it that way. Matthew 6 and 20, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. Excuse me, I'm going to try to get rid of this little warning down here. He's telling me I don't have antivirus, but I don't have internet either. Philippians 3 and 20, our citizenship is in heaven. This is so important. We're very proud of our citizenship, our American citizenship. But let us never forget that we are sojourners and pilgrims. We're foreigners here in this world. This world is not our home. From which we also eagerly wait for the Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ. Hebrews 10:34, you joyfully accepted the plundering of your goods, your possessions, knowing that you have a better and an enduring possession for yourselves in heaven. This, of course, was written to Christians that were being sorely persecuted. We have so many of these wonderful hymns. Jared has led these for us this evening. We appreciate so much. We read of a place that's called heaven. Oh, think of the home over there, and the sweet by and by, above the bright blue, beyond the sunset's radiant glow. Heaven holds all to me. Home of the soul. And then the one we sang, no tears in heaven. Or sing to me of heaven. Many, many more. And this is so important. These songs that we sing, they're so inspirational, they're so uplifting, and they remind us constantly of who we are and what our goal is in this world. This is, of course, the one hope. We need to believe this with all of our heart. Ephesians 4 and verse 4, there is one body, one spirit, just as you were called in one hope of your calling. This is heaven. This is not a 1,000-year reign on renovated earth. So many people looking forward to a secret rapture and all of those things that are just pure fiction. They're pure fables that men have invented. The one hope is just exactly what Jesus has promised, our home in heaven. Colossians 1 and verse 5, because of the hope which is laid up for you in heaven. Hebrews 6:18, we have fled for refuge to lay hold of the hope set before. This is based on the idea of laying hold on the horns of the altar to find refuge. And then he adds the word anchor. We know what an anchor is. As an anchor of the soul. Think of a ship in a storm-tossed sea. Will your anchor hold? As an anchor of the soul, both sure and steadfast, and which enters the presence behind the veil. Romans 8:24, Paul even affirms that in hope were we saved. That's how important it is. Here's a very, very important ingredient of our salvation. In hope were we saved. And he also uses in the describing the armor, the Christian, take the helmet, which is the hope of salvation. Here's the very helmet protects our head in this Christian warfare, the hope of salvation. Without this, a person, of course, is just, he'll not be strong. He'll not be steadfast. He'll not be faithful. It is that which anchors him in his service to God. So, just listing, and you could name many, many more, but hope, the hope of heaven, motivates us to be obedient, to be faithful. It gives us peace of mind, peace in our soul. If we really believe, if we are confident and we believe that we're heaven bound, then we'll have this peace of mind. We'll have peace in our soul, come what may. No matter what is going on, no matter what the problems of life, the difficulties, whatever, this is the anchor of our soul. It gives us strength to endure the trials and tribulations that come our way. It gives us strength also to resist temptation. We say it's not worth it. If this is going to cost me my soul salvation, it's not worth it. What will a man give in exchange for his soul? The greatest possession that man has. So this hope, the hope of heaven, gives us strength to resist temptations. It gives us strength to endure persecutions. Because like Christ said, they can kill the body, but they can't kill the soul. All of those precious promises that have to do with the Lord knows, the Lord cares, the Lord helps us, the Lord guides us, He strengthens us, and so we can endure persecution. It fixes our eyes on Jesus and transforms us into His image. This is such a vital part of this hope that we have of heaven. Endure persecutions. Endure trials. Tribulation. I don't think I put it in this outline. I think I forgot. But I'm always including the expression that these things make us homesick for heaven. The trials and the illnesses, the afflictions or whatever, they make us homesick for heaven. We want a place where we won't have these problems. 1 Peter 1 and 3, blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who according to His abundant mercy has begotten us again to a living hope. This is not a hope that will abandon us or leave us disappointed or leave us ashamed. It is a living, enduring, solid hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. Again, I want to mention this, that heaven is our reward. It's not a debt. We're not saying that God owes it to us. We don't earn salvation. However, the Bible freely speaks of the word reward. So we can. We can read these. We can preach it. We can teach it. We can believe it. That the Lord says we will be rewarded for our faithfulness. Romans 8 and 8, verse 18, the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the reward, the glory which shall be revealed to us. 2 Corinthians 4:17, for our light affliction. Just imagine the Apostle Paul, after he had mentioned all the horrible sufferings and persecutions in chapter 11 of the first letter, and now he says, our light affliction. How can he use the word light? Well, there again, you're comparing, which is but for a moment. But Paul, it lasted for years and years and years. He said, yeah, that's just a moment. You compare years and years and years with eternity, and you don't even have a drop in the ocean. But for a moment. And it's working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. Again, Matthew 5:12, rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. Paul speaks of a crown. Very, very familiar scripture, 2 Timothy 4:8. Fought a good fight, finished the course, kept the faith. So there's laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord will give to me, and not to me only, but to all those who love His appearing. So heaven is referred to in the Bible as our inheritance. So many people are concerned about their earthly inheritance. You know, what will I have? What will I receive? We have an inheritance in heaven, but we must make reservations. We must make reservations. Our name must be written in the book. It's what Christ told the 70 in Luke 10. They came back and they were just marveling that even the demons are in subjection to us and in your name. And he said, don't. He said, yeah, that's true. Don't rejoice in that. But rejoice that your name are written in heaven. That's what really counts. If we don't have our reservations in order in God's book in heaven, nothing else matters. Nothing else matters. Did you ever think, traveling somewhere and you thought you had reservations in a certain place, a certain hotel or something, and you got there and you were disappointed? It can happen. I'm afraid, like Jesus said in Matthew 7, there's going to be lots and lots of people bitterly disappointed when they think they're ready to pass through the doors into everlasting life. And the Lord will say, I don't know you. I don't have your name in my book. Horrible, horrible thought. Israel's inheritance was very important. The Bible really emphasizes this land that flowed with milk and honey, the promised land, and it was worth all of the struggle, all the battles and all that. But it couldn't begin to compare with our inheritance. We use it as a type of ours, but there's really no comparison. 1 Peter 1:4, an inheritance incorruptible. Incorruptible. Undefiled. That does not fade away. Reserved in heaven for you. Hebrews 10:34, you have in heaven a better and enduring possession. That's where he said, we read a moment ago, how that you've endured with rejoicing the spoiling of your goods, the loss of your earthly possessions, knowing that you have in heaven a better and an enduring possession, because nobody can take it away from you. You can't lose it. Once you inherit this wonderful, wonderful home, nobody can plunder it. Nobody can take it from you. Hebrews 11:10, Abraham was looking for the city which has foundations. I like that. I have many, many times in reading Hebrews 11, every time I read that, I think of Abraham living in tents. You know, Abraham dwelling in tents. And that was their habitation. That was their house. You know, countless numbers of people. But tents don't have foundations. Tents don't have foundations. He was looking for the city which has foundation. Whose builder, whose architect and builder is God. Hebrews 12:22, but you have come to Mount Zion, to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, to an innumerable company of angels. Revelation 21:2, then I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And you know, Paul uses a figure over and over comparing the church to a bride. And the bride is, of course, to always have her beautiful robe spotless, without wrinkle, without blemish, appropriate for her perfect husband. Prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. Beautiful thought. And then the hymn we sang a few moments ago, no tears, nor can they die anymore. Can you imagine this? Can we take this in? You know, we're going to be in a place where there absolutely are no deaths, no dying, no death, no growing old. Are we saying, you know, never grow old? Equal to the angels. Christ said that in heaven, you know, they're neither married nor given in marriage. But they're equal to the angels. And are sons of God, being sons of the resurrection. And I always say, well, my wife and I, we won't be married, but she'll be my favorite angel. Revelation 21:4, and he will wipe away every tear from their eyes. And there will no longer be any death. There will no longer be any mourning or crying or pain. The first things have passed away. Can we imagine that? Meditate. Just stop and think of all that we know in this life and so many situations and circumstances where we are weeping, we are crying, and we are mourning. And there'll be absolutely none of that. Not even any pain, no discomfort of any kind. Not even tears of joy. You know, we shed tears of joy. Why? Why do we shed tears of joy? Well, that's because joy is such a stranger that all of a sudden there's something really joyous and it brings tears to our eyes. But there won't be any. Joy won't be a stranger. That'll be the way of life in that heavenly home. Revelation 22:14, blessed are those who do His commandments, that they may have the right to the tree of life and may enter through the gates into the city. How simple. That they may have a right to the tree of life. We think of the tree of life being lost back in Eden, the Garden of Eden, and now being regained, paradise regained, as we enter through the gates into the city. You know, there's a lot of emphasis in the book of Revelation about precious stones. Revelation 21:10, He carried me away into the Spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me the great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God, having the glory of God. Her light was like a most precious stone, like a jasper stone, clear as crystal. The idea here in Revelation is to talk about earth's most valuable treasures. What are the most valuable metals or treasures here upon the earth? Whatever you can name, gold, silver, precious stones of every kind. And these are used to talk about heaven. Not of course, not that they'll literally be there. But it's to impress upon our minds that whatever we think of as being the most wonderful, the most beautiful, the most valuable of all our treasures, Let that help us. Let that help us to think of how wonderful heaven will be. Revelation 21:18, the construction of its wall was of jasper, and the city was pure gold, like glass. 12 gates were 12 pearls. Beautiful beyond measure, beautiful beyond comprehension. How beautiful heaven must be. The street of the city was pure gold. But it'll not be like any great city that we know or know about in this world. So different. So completely different. Just think of all the things that we have in our great important cities that won't be there. No funeral homes, because there's no death there. No hospitals. Can you imagine a city without a hospital? Oh, that's unthinkable. Hospitals, and clinics, and doctor's offices, and pharmacies, all of that. No illness. That just, that like we say, that boggles the mind, doesn't it? But no grocery stores. No clothing stores. We'll have bodies. We will have resurrected bodies, and John said we'll be like Christ. That's all we know. We don't know what we'll be, but we know we'll be like Christ. And that's enough. That's enough said. But we won't have physical bodies. And when we think of the word city, we think of these things. But in Revelation, we're not talking of that kind of city. No cosmetic stores, no beauty salon. Because angels have no use for such things. That I know of. Don't think so. There won't be women or men. So often we talk about angels like, we picture them as females. The Bible just says angels. And of course, as Christ says, there'll be no marrying or giving in marriage. And so that eliminates the concept of male or female. So it is a city in the sense of a great gathering. It's a concurrence. It's a gathering of the redeemed of all ages, all around the throne of God. Hebrews 12 and 22, an innumerable company of angels to begin with, and the spirits of just men made perfect. Now here's the thing that is more appealing to me. Each person, there are things that he appreciates the most. He or she appreciates the most, and are the most impressionable for you according to your concepts of what's valuable. But these expressions about paradise, these really catch my attention. The word is actually, it comes from the parks. The very, very famous, the fabulous parks of Persian kings and nobles. A park with all the trees and the flowers and the streams and the pools and everything that's beautiful in that category. It's the idea of paradise. Just imagine the Garden of Eden, if we could. If we could really picture and imagine the Garden of Eden. And surely that's what it was. It was just a super park, as we think of a park. It can be so very, very appealing. People love to go to the park to rest or for picnics, holiday activities. It's an appealing place. It's a nice gathering place. And that is the essence the idea of paradise. It's just another way of saying that here is something that is extremely desirable. It's just, you go to the superlative degree in describing how wonderful it is. And whatever parks that you've seen, whatever parks that you know about, that are just really, really outstanding, you might keep that in mind as a comparison. In my own experience, my wife and I, we've seen some fabulous parks. Maybe some of you in Guadalajara, but also in the country of Colombia. It's just absolutely breathtaking. And these, of course, are God's parks. These are God's creations, and they're just so marvelous, so wonderful. And this word is used to appeal to us, to make us say, hey, this is very, very desirable. We want to go. Well, in my case, this, like I say, this means more to me than precious stone. But whatever there is that is, in your concept, very, very desirable and beautiful and so forth, then it's compared to heaven. Revelation 2 and 7, to him who overcomes, I will grant to eat of the tree of life, which is in the paradise of God. So we're talking, actually, we're just talking about the sum total of blessedness. It's absolutely beyond description. And heaven will be our home forever. Here again is a term that we can't even begin to grasp. We cannot fathom. You know, something that sometime when a man is maybe, you know, kind of pushing it and maybe he's overworked and someone will say, well, you ought to take a vacation. That sometimes this is said to preachers who travel, hold gospel meetings and so forth, and they say, home. That's it. Being at home is vacation for me. And that's where heaven will be. That'll be our vacation home. It'll be the perfect place of rest and enjoyment forever and ever. 1 Thessalonians 4:17, then we who are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them. We're talking about the resurrection. First Christ will come, and then first will be the resurrection of the dead, and then we who are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and thus here's heaven. Thus, we shall always be with the Lord. That will be heaven for us, to always be with the Lord, whatever it is. 2 Corinthians 5, look at this for just a moment. 2 Corinthians 5, 6 and 8. The Apostle Paul says something here that is so interesting with regard to this. He's talking here in chapter 5, verses 6 and 8. So we're always confident, knowing that while we are at home in the body, now, at home in the body, we are absent from the Lord. But we walk by faith, not by sight. We are confident, yes, well pleased, rather, to be absent from the body and to be present with the Lord. That's what we want. Not that we're wanting to die. Not that we want to die, but we realize, like the Apostle Paul said, that for me to die is gain. For me to die is gain. And that's what this is. With being in the body, you know, we're absent from the Lord. But then to really be at home, we'll be at home with the Lord. So we'll always be at home with the Lord. Just to be near the Lord I adore, that will be glory for me. It's another one of the heaven songs. Just to be near the dear Lord I adore, that will be heaven for me. And then also the hymn that says, no longing for elsewhere to be. Imagine that. Where we are, no matter where we live, what's going on, there's a chance that you may be longing to be somewhere else for some reason. And we'll never have that. Never have that feeling. You'll never have the feeling of longing to be somewhere else once we get in heaven. No way. That will be glory for me. Imagine never having to move again. Never wanting to move again. no longing for elsewhere to be. Finally, a grand family reunion. Revelation 14:2, and I heard a voice from heaven like the sound of many waters. What is this? What is it? What is this sound of many waters? Singing. We sang the song while when all of God's singers get home. That's it. A voice from heaven, like the sound of many waters. Imagine that volume, that thunderous sound, like the sound of loud thunder. And the voice which I heard was like, now he didn't say he heard harps playing. There won't be any harps or organs or anything material or physical in heaven. But the voice that I heard was like the sound of harpists playing on their harp for sweetness. Here you have volume, but you also have sweetness. And this is all of God's singers. A grand family reunion. Will we know each other in heaven? I don't know why people ask that question. Quite often, you know, that question will pop up. Will we really know each other in heaven? And the only reply to that is, why not? Why not? Why wouldn't we know each other in heaven? Just think of how often Jesus talks about Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Matthew 17, Moses and Elijah appeared to Christ there on the Mount of Transfiguration. Which Moses was that? Which Elijah was that? It was the only one. The only ones the Bible talks about. It's Moses. It's Moses and it was Elijah. Will we know each other? Will we know our loved ones who have gone on before? Do you long to be with them? Do you want to meet? We've been talking in the class, you know, about these co-workers of Paul. Paul and his companions. Paul and Barnabas and Timothy and Titus and Epaphras and all of these. You know what? I want to meet them. I want to see them. I want to talk to them. I want to ask Paul some questions. I know I'll have to get in line and wait 1,000 years, but that, you know, I won't be in any hurry. The real Paul, the real Timothy, will know him as well as all those that we know, that we've known during our life, loved ones, family and loved ones, and many brethren. I would dearly love to see, my wife and I would love to see and visit with a number of brethren we've known in different Latin American countries. We tell them, no more, we're not traveling now, but we certainly plan to see you one of these days. I spoke in Athens, east side in Athens one day. I don't remember if it was in the morning or evening, but they support a number of gospel preachers in the Spanish work. And I was giving them a report of these men and their activities. I had recommended them. And as I was going along, it just occurred to me, I said, brethren, I know you don't know these men. You don't know these men you're supporting. They're good, solid men, and they're doing a wonderful work, and you're having a part with them, and you don't know them. But you're going to. You're going to. I don't have a doubt in my mind, one of these days. And one of the elders got up and he couldn't even talk. He was so choked up. But it's the truth. That's what it's all about. This is real, brethren. This is not fantasy. We're not talking about mythology and fables. This is real. And we're only one step. I mean, we're just one heartbeat from leaving this old world and being in the spiritual realm until the resurrection, and then with our resurrected bodies, go on to be with the Lord forever in heaven. Yeah, I want to know Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Moses and Elijah and Paul and Peter and all those apostles. And all of us together singing the hymns of Zion forever and ever. We lose our body, but we don't lose our mind. We don't lose our mind. We don't lose our memory. You remember Luke 16, Abraham said to the rich man? Remember? He said, remember? He could remember. He had now gone, you know, out of this world and into the spirit world, but Abraham said, remember. And he did. And he remembered his brothers and didn't want them to come to that place. We don't lose our mind. We don't lose our personality. We are the same people. You will be you, I will be I. And we'll be without all the frailties of these physical bodies, and we'll be in a resurrected body, spiritual body that is incorruptible. Revelation 21:4, God will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, no sorrow, no crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away. Talked about in the daytime, because there'll be no night there. No night there. Imagine that. No night. And its gates will never be closed. Where the gates swing outward never. We talk about rest. Mentioning heaven and all of these blessings, we talk about rest. But we're not talking about inactivity. There's nothing blessed about inactivity. Nothing heavenly about inactivity. What could be worse than that kind of rest, even now? No, we'll be serving God. We'll be serving God forever and ever, in the presence of God, serving Him forever. What will we be doing? Well, the Bible doesn't spell it out. But what about those who don't like to serve Him now in the church? You think they'd be interested in serving God forever and ever in heaven? Because this rest is a matter, the idea of rest is a matter of alleviation. It's a matter of rest from sorrow and pain and suffering and death and alleviation from all these things. But it's not the rest of inactivity. Finally, and I am closing, but we need to put ourselves in the picture. That's what I was trying to do a while ago. I was trying to put us in the picture. Trying to put us in this picture of the 144,000. This picture of all the redeemed of all ages, all the way back. All the way back to the beginning. And until the end of time. All that we've said in this lesson tonight is just wonderful. It's too wonderful for words. But only if we're there. It's not wonderful if we miss it. If we miss it, it'll only be remorse and regret. So we need to imagine ourselves in the actual presence of God, the angels, and the redeemed of all ages, around the throne of God, the street of gold and the gates of pearl. Beautiful, breathtaking park, paradise. And actually be a part of the 144,000 singing praise to God. Who are the 144,000? That's 12 tribes, represents the Old Testament people. 12 apostles, representing the New Testament era, times 1,000, a large, indefinite number. 12 times 12. Times 1,000. To take in all the saved of all ages, singing praise to God. With Abraham and Moses and Elijah and the apostles. Oh, I want to go there. Look upon His face. That should be the one grand purpose of our life. So, main thing is be sure that our names are written in heaven, and also remember to always keep it there. Christ talks about that He could erase someone's name. from the book of life. Let's keep these wonderful thoughts in mind as we live from day to day. We have an invitation song we're going to sing. And anyone that tonight needs to respond, whether to obey the gospel or to be restored, we're inviting you to come while we stand and sing this invitation song.
When Jesus comes to reward